This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor in southern New England, and I go to Jeremy Zakas, my guide on all things cricket in New South Wales. Casey at the bat. The mighty Casey will not strike out in the first match. He'll be on the bench. Jeremy, I don't know if this is bad news or recognition that Pat Cummings is older, but he's sitting out the first match. Does that mean he's out of the all five meets? Good evening.
Well, John, technically, no. He still could come back. Pat Cummings, who was expected to be our captain for the Ashes, while he is sitting out for the very first game, there is a potential he could still come back for the next four. However, I do say there is a precedence now, because typically when a captain sits out the first game in an Ashes series, there's a very slim chance they're actually going to come back for any of the other games, or at least in the capacity of captain. So what we're seeing right now is that Steve Smith, one of our other fabulous and fantastic players, has been nominated and selected as the captain to take over from Pat Cummings. And to be honest, John, Pat Cummings and Steve Smith are two peas in a pod. They're very, very similar, very similar strategies. They manage the team in a very similar manner. So no doubt Steve Smith will probably shine during this. But I think we're now understanding, and I think we've come to realise that Pat Cummings, all those weeks ago when we knew that he was injured and that there was, you know, there was hope he would come back and actually play Ashes, but I think we were all really kidding ourselves, because he had quite a severe shoulder injury and had some back problems as well. This is where we were going to be. All I can say is I'm glad we found out now, 3 weeks before the Ashes test starts, because in Perth on 22nd of November, because if it was left up to the last minute and they were basically either rushing a new captain in for selection or doing something that could upset the team, that could have been devastating for us. So this is good. We know early. We know Pat Cummings is probably going to be out. The team can now move on. And we've got a bit of an idea now of, you know, the Australian team is going to have Pat Smith and probably a lot of brute force sort of bowlers and batters in behind them to take on the English. So as an Aussie who loves cricket, we now know what we can expect from our own guys going into the summer.
Jeremy, does the captain of the team, he's on the field, does he move people around defensively? Does he have the chart about who hits where, the way a manager does in baseball?
Yes, exactly. That's beautifully articulated, John. That's exactly what the captain of the cricket team does. He is effectively the manager on the field. So he's also out there bowling and batting and playing the actual game, but he can also move people around on the field. He is the one, if you watch a cricket broadcast, he will normally walk up to the crease or to the pitch in between balls and actually start pointing the fielders and telling them to come in or move out and actually placing them based on what he's observing of the other team. So he has a lot of control over the team. Has to be somebody who's very, very smart and switched on and has a good memory for how the team's playing in the previous overs, because they really do make or break a team with how they position their fielding staff, how they also put the batting lineup in, and how they actually play themselves. Because, of course, they're there to really inspire the rest of the team, but also they're often quite high up in the lineup. So they're often one of the first to bat and one of the first to bowl, because they're typically recognised as one of the best physical players as well. So they have a lot of power, and that's why selecting the captain for the Ashes is a very, very big deal here in Australia.
Your Australia news also has the possibility that a young man named Manus Labuschagne will come back. She was dropped from the test side earlier this year, and he wants back in. That reminds me, I think you told me the team is not selected yet. Is that correct?
Oh, that's absolutely correct. And Langer, as he's called, Manus, he was dropped because he wasn't really performing in the one-day internationals, which is basically a one-day version of the five-day test that Ashes is. And he, to his credit, he went back. He basically worked on a lot of his own technical skills, played a lot of cricket this year, did not injure himself, got himself very fit. And honestly, I think he's one of the no-brainer selections really for our side. He's a good all-rounder in many ways, in that he can bat and bowl very technically well. So he's not necessarily the fastest bowler or the hardest batter, but he can take the tricky shots. He's also a very good fielder as well. So having him on the team, especially in a very fit state with a lot of recent experience, including against England, that's great. There's a lot more out there, John, just like him. And because the team has not been finalised yet, we're probably going to see some interesting selections that we may not have really thought of. We might see some younger players that may have not been considered previously, because we were expecting a more conservative team in this Ashes. But I think this is really exciting, the fact we don't know that we do have that ability on the Australian side to really select a team based on how these last few weeks go, especially watching how the British do in other one-day international tests. So he's one of many I think we'll start to see being nominated, but the team isn't set in concrete either yet. So he probably will be on the team, but we just don't know. So this is an exciting time as well for selection.
Just in case you're ready to pull your money out and put it all on England, we have some details here. Put your money back in your pocket. It turns out that even though Australia is troubled by injuries and uncertainty, England is having problems in all directions. A polite way of putting this is they're struggling at the plate. What's happened to them, Jeremy? And can we praise New Zealand? Let's praise New Zealand, Jeremy.
Yes, I'm very happy, John, to take that track. I'm going to say that the Kiwis, New Zealand, has done a fantastic job, because what happened this week, John, was during a one-day international, a cricket game that goes for the entire day, against England, New Zealand beat England decisively. In fact, it was almost like the British didn't really turn up. They were just not scoring the runs. They just could not get the New Zealand team out. And it was just an absolute mess. It was so disheartening for the English that their own cricket commentators, a lot of the late greats, the very old ones that you look to for commentary about how England's going to go in the Ashes, are now saying that England is in dire straits leading into the Ashes because they lost so badly against the Kiwis. But I'm happy to accept, John, that maybe the Kiwis had a fantastic time. I mean, I will point out, too, that New Zealand did make a lot of errors during their game that England wasn't able to capitalise on. I don't know what was happening there. But New Zealand, you know, let's say they did a fantastic job. Let's say England, you know, just met maybe a stronger New Zealand team that we're used to. And, you know, they're not in that much trouble. But as an Aussie, John, I'm secretly hoping that this is what we're going to see during the Ashes.
Now, I have no reason to believe this could ever happen. However, I mentioned that in pool, hustling somebody means that you show them sometimes you miss a shot, and then you play for real money and they wipe you out. Has that ever happened in cricket? Could England be throwing the game against the Kiwis because they knew Australia was watching and they're ready to reverse themselves come November?
Yes, I think the official line, John, is no. Every game is played to the full degree that the team can actually achieve. But the actual reality and the history of cricket has many, many examples of this, particularly during the 80s when cricket was especially aggressive and especially, I guess you could say, shonky in many ways, where we did have a number of Australian teams just before many Ashes series effectively throw games. They put in the worst players, and then, of course, when they came into the Ashes, they brought some of the more aggressive players. And in fact, if you look in your history, we have what's called the Bodyline series in Australia and England, where basically we had basically games that were thrown and teams that were supposedly weak. But then when they actually came to the plate, or when they actually came to the games that mattered, such as the Ashes, they played what was called a bodyline series of cricket, which was effectively aggressive to the point where you'd actually bowl the ball directly at the batters to scare them. In some cases, you'd try and hit them, and it basically became thuggery on the field. But it was all the pretext for a lot of it was you would actually have teams that look very weak. So, of course, when that came out, it was basically like a shock to the face that you'd be facing such an aggressive team. So, John, that's a long way of saying I agree. I think there is a potential here that the English side that we saw going against New Zealand may not have actually been their strongest side, may not have been the true Ashes side. And while we are all looking at it and saying, oh, dear, the English are in trouble, I'm going to be very, very conservative myself. I'm going to say that I think you're right. I think this is part of the beautiful part of psychological warfare before the Ashes. I think this is England showing that they are not only going to play a very brutal force of cricket, I think, during the Ashes, a very strong sort of cricket, but they are also playing a strategic game here, messaging some things that are going to basically shake our selectors a little bit too. So, John, this is great. This is all starting right now.
The clock. Are you on the same clock as New Zealand?
We are around about 2 hours behind, so we're not far off.
All right. So Canberra or Adelaide or Perth, would they be on the same clock or different?
Well, Canberra's definitely on the same clock as us here, and Adelaide's half an hour behind, so we're all around about the same time.
What about Perth?
Perth is currently 3 hours behind because they don't believe in daylight savings, so they've really put themselves behind the rest of the country.
and that is 3 hours behind. You're 2 hours. I just want to see whether they can watch in real time the match in New Zealand.
Oh, that they could have. They would have got up very early because New Zealand would have started, say, about 9 o'clock, which would have been, say, or about 4 a.m. Over in Perth. So they could have. It would have been an early start for them, but it's a close enough time zone.
And I'm presuming the game was in New Zealand because they've come in to acclimatize themselves before the match starts, because they're coming from fall in the north. So they want to get used to your warm temperatures before they take the field. That makes sense. All right, we've got 3 weeks to go. Very exciting. This will be the first year I ever anticipated something besides Thanksgiving in November. Jeremy Zachas, New South Wales, where we've got an adventure for Dallas, the spoodle who has adopted the whole, as far as I can tell, the whole panoply of birds in Australia. He's a bird watcher. And thanks to Jeremy, he's also a bird provider. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.